You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old pal said. Boy, you've got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me. With Randy Newman's song playing in the background, or playing along while Andy was playing with his best friend Woody, the opening to the original Toy Story movie has to be the sweetest Disney movie intro of all time. Beyond doubt, it's not debatable. Don't even try to argue with me. I'm not going to listen. It's my opinion, so I'm sticking to my opinion on that. Perhaps because it was created by Pixar before Disney absorbed it into their universe, and it didn't revolve around tragedy. It was also just a great song, which is why it persisted through all four Toy Story movies to connect to the real story of the power of friendship. Scientific studies are consistent. Friends are vital to our well-being and are some of the most powerful bonds that we can have as human beings. They give us confidence and bolster our sense of self, especially during tough times. They increase our sense of purpose and belonging. They significantly influence some of our most important behaviors. In other words, the friends you make have an enormous impact on your life. In many ways, they shape it. And sometimes they save it, like in the story of Jonathan and David that occurred 3,000 years ago in 1 Samuel 18, verses 1 through 4. Let's read the text as we open our study this evening. 1 Samuel 18, verses 1 through 4. Beginning of verse 1 of 1 Samuel 18, we read this. Now it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul, that is David, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David, and with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. We see there the beginning of the story of the friendship of Jonathan and David. You know, so much of the story of David after he was anointed in chapter 16 and then became Israel's hero in chapter 17 after killing Goliath, unfolded as a tragedy with him spending about a decade of his life running from Saul. The one constant bright spot through all of that was his friendship with Jonathan. And that was not only a source of comfort during the dark days of hiding in caves and running for his life, but quite literally life-saving as well. And so tonight, as we continue our series, David, a Better Man, we're going to look at the story with the title, You've Got a Friend in Me. And we're going to look at it in four parts. First part is the common interest that Jonathan and David had. Then we'll look at the covenant commitment that they made to one another. And then their constant concern that they had for each other that ends with cries of sorrow as they part and then as Jonathan is killed. And so those are the four things that we're going to look at tonight as we develop this idea of the power of friendship. The importance of having a friend in me, a friend in someone. And so to begin with, let's look at the idea of the common interest. And remember, last week's lesson was on David as a bold believer. And he was greatly disappointed at Israel's lack of faith, its fearful and faithless response to the insult that Goliath was heaping on the nation of Israel and upon Israel's God, Jehovah. And this insulted him highly. And in the middle of his response to that, and especially when he went out and faced Goliath, we saw his belief in God, the bold belief in God. Look at chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, verses 45 through 47. Let's look at this again. I think it's worth reading again. Verse 45 of 1 Samuel 17. Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. You've insulted my God. It's in his name that I'm coming." Verse 46, "This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And then I can almost see him turning and looking at his fellow Israelites and saying, and that all this assembly, maybe even looking at the Philistines on the other side of the valley and saying, all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's and he will give you into our hands. If you're the kind of person that marks your Bible, this is a passage to mark in your Bible, to underline or highlight in some way, because it's a powerful display and declaration of the intense faith that David had in his God. He recognized that God was powerful, that God would be the one who would get him through this, and that God would stand up for his people. He knew what God had said in the Bible about back in the book of Deuteronomy and in other passages about the importance of serving God, and that if you obeyed and served God, God would lead you and God would go in front of you and God would win battles for you. And so he trusted God in that way. He had that much faith in God. And this is where we see his common interest with Jonathan, because when we see Jonathan, when we first meet Jonathan, we see almost the exact same kind of faith in God. Jonathan was a bold believer too. Look back in chapter 14. And let's read verses 1 through 14. And I want you to pick out some things. There's some things there also worth underlining in this text. Beginning in 1 Samuel 14, verse 1. Now the day came that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who was carrying his armor, come, and let us cross over to the Philistine garrison that is on the other side. But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah under the pomegranate tree, which is in Migron, and the people who were with him were about 600 men. And Ahijah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the priest of the Lord at Shiloh, was wearing an ephod, and the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. So everybody's sitting there hiding, and the priest is there, and they've got all of this ability to find out what God wants them, but we already saw in chapter 13 that Saul didn't trust God. But Jonathan does. Because notice what he says in verse 14, beginning of verse 4. Between the passes by which Jonathan sought to cross over to the Philistine garrison. And I'm going to have to get a picture of this, but there's a sharp crag on one side and a sharp crag on the other. So there's a narrow pass with a real sharp cliffs on both sides. And the name of one was Bozez, and the name of the other Senna, and the one crag rose on the north opposite Michmash, and the other on the south opposite Geba. So that tells you where it is, and so there's confidence that they know where that is in their pictures that show it's just really sharp, narrow cliff, a narrow valley through sharp cliffs. So first of all, it's difficult to go through, and so anybody on top will see who's coming through. And so Jonathan says to his armor bearer, verse 6, said to the young man who was carrying his armor, come and let us cross over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us. And so now he's demonstrating he's got a little faith. He said, all right, let's go through this. Let's go and face these guys and see what happens. And notice what he says. There's a hint here. This is a good place to underline or mark. For the Lord is not restrained to save by many or by few. So right there, Jonathan is declaring his trust in God's ability to save. He doesn't need to have a lot of people. It can be just Jonathan and his armor bearer. There's nobody else with him. Verse 7, his armor bearer showed his trust in Jonathan. He said to him, do all that is in your heart. Turn yourself and here I am with you according to your desire. So I'm with you, bud. Verse 8, then Jonathan said, behold, we will cross over to the men and reveal ourselves to them. If they say to us, wait until we come to you, then we will stand in our place and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hands. This shall be the sign to us. When both of them revealed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines said, behold, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves. What does that say about Saul and the army and the Israelites and how fearful they were? Verse 12, so the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up here and we'll tell you something. Now you think it's going to be something good? No. They come up there so they can insult them and maybe kill them. And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me, for, and here's another place to underline, the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel. Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet with his armor bearer. So it was a tough climb up there. And the armor bearer behind him. And when they got up there, they just cut straight to the chase. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer put some to death after him. So Jonathan climbed up to the top of the cliff where the army barricade was and where these garrison of soldiers was. And he got his sword out and commenced to killing these enemies of God of Israel. Verse 14, that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men within about a half a furrow in an acre of land. So in a very small enclosed space, God got victory through Jonathan. Jonathan demonstrated a bold belief that he was a bold believer just like David. And as a result of this got the ball rolling toward a great victory for the nation. They were able to defeat this great they had this battle then that Saul had to now quit hiding and quit cowering in fear and come out and attack and go out on the offensive and attack the nation of the Philistines. And they got a great victory at this point. All initiated by the faith of one man, Jonathan, who was willing to take on 20 people by himself. Bold believer. So then when we read about David in 1 Samuel 17, going out and killing Goliath and making the declarations that he made against Goliath, we see that that is exactly the same mentality and mindset that Saul's son Jonathan had. Now, why Jonathan hadn't gone out and attacked Goliath, I don't know. But we see that they're common interests, that there's a commonality between them, that they are very much alike. No wonder it says in chapter 18, verse 1, that his soul was knit to the soul of David. They were bound together. Jonathan looked at David and saw what he did, watched what he did, and talked to him and realized, this is my guy. This is a guy that is just, he has this even more passion and faith for God than me. This is somebody I want to be connected to, that I want to have a close tie to. And they became fast friends that were committed to one another. And that takes us to our next point here. When he saw that David had a kindred heart of faith in Yahweh, then he made a covenant commitment to be his friend. Go back to chapter 18, verse 1. It says, Jonathan loved him as himself. That is, Jonathan loved David as himself. Verse 3, then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. So it says it twice, bringing out the importance of this idea. And so what we see here with Jonathan and David is a mutual commitment to each other. They make a covenant. They make a promise to submit to and serve one another. Possibly even a formal covenant, possibly even formalized with a sacrifice, but certainly with an exchange of goods. Notice what he says. He gave him, stripped himself of the robe that was on him, and he gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt, symbolizing his commitment to give anything David wanted to David so that David could have what he needed. That was the demonstration of their covenant commitment to one another. There's a second stanza in the song, You've Got a Friend in Me, that says this, there isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. And that's what Jonathan is telling his friend David. I'll give you the clothes off my back. I'll give you my armor. I'll give you whatever you want. I won't hold anything back from you that you want. And so David and Jonathan, they formally declare their mutual commitment to one another because they already had a mutual commitment to the first commandment. Remember the two, when Jesus talks about the first commandment, the first great commandment, and the second one like it. The first one is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Samuel and David obviously were 1,000 years before Jesus, but they believed that as well because they knew the text from where Jesus got it. Go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, another passage well worth underlining if you're marking in your Bible. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, they would have known this passage. They would have known this text. Remember, as king, Saul was responsible for writing out his own copy of the book of Deuteronomy. And so they would have read it, and Jonathan would have read it, and they were certainly familiar with it. But in chapter 6, let's read verses 4 through 9. Here he's telling them, he says, reminding them after reminding them of the Ten Commandments, says to them, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one." Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Verse 5, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might." This is a passage quoted by Jesus and known in the first century among the Jews as the Great Commandment. Verse 6, "These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hands, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." So that he's telling them, these are the kind of things that you need to be talking to your children about all the time. Presumably, that's been going on with David and with Jonathan. And they know that, and that's why they have great faith. The others don't seem to either have paid any attention to it, and certainly don't believe it, but Jonathan and David certainly do. So it was not surprising that with they knowing that, I'll also read verse 13. Verse 13 says this, "You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name." The reason I say that Jonathan and David knew this, that when they faced the Philistines and the enemy, they weren't afraid of the Philistines and the enemy. They were concerned about God. They weren't afraid of the enemy because they knew they had God on their side. So they knew who to be afraid of. And it wasn't the Philistine. It wasn't the world. It wasn't the people around them. So it's not surprising that they would also believe in the second great commandment, which is to love your neighbor as yourself. Look over in the book of Leviticus. When Jesus talks about love your neighbor as yourself, and when they're talking about that in the first century, they're knowing that that comes from the book of Leviticus. They're quoting straight out of the Old Testament law. And in Leviticus chapter 19, there we go, Leviticus chapter 19, in the midst of several laws, we read this in verses 17 and 18. And I want you to notice the things that he says here, and there's some additional that we can look at the end of this. Verse 17, "You shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. You may surely reprove your neighbor, but shall not incur sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance, nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." Verse 17 and 18. Then skip down to verses 33 and 34. 33 and 34 kind of expand that a little bit, saying that's not just Israelites. Notice who else is included in this. Verse 33. "When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as the native among you, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." So what he's telling them is that even strangers, even people who are not part of your people, if they're in your nation and they're part of, and they're living amongst you, consider them as part of your people and extend to them the same law that you extend to your brothers and your fellow Israelites. Love them as yourself. And so this is demonstrated between Jonathan and David in a very powerful way, because it's possible, though it's not clear yet, that Jonathan knew that David was going to be the one that was going to replace his father. And here's what we have to understand. Jonathan would have already heard, and maybe was there when Samuel had rebuked Saul, and said God was going to take it away from you and give it to you, the man who is a man after God's own heart. So your kingdom's not. So Jonathan's already hearing that the kingdom's not going to pass down to him through his father Saul, because God's going to give it to someone who has a heart after God. So Aaron knew that, and they also already heard the passage of the event there in chapter 15, where Samuel had told Saul that God has torn the kingdom from you and given it to a better man. So Jonathan was aware of that. And probably because of his trust in Samuel, believed that it's very likely I'm not going to be the next king. And then he sees this young man come along and demonstrate the kind of faith in God that his father, Saul, didn't have. And he may have already begun to think, maybe this is the guy that's the better man. Maybe this is the guy that's going to be the neighbor with his heart after God. Don't know for sure, but we do know that if you turn over a couple of chapters to chapter 23, that Jonathan had figured it out. Jonathan knew that David was going to be the next king. And in their last and very, very poignant last event between them in 1 Samuel chapter 23. We read this in verses 15 through 18. 1 Samuel 23, verses 15 through 18. This is the last time that we read of where David and Jonathan were able to be together. Verse 15 says, "Now David became aware that Saul had come out to seek his life while David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh and encouraged him in God." Notice where Jonathan's common interest is? In God, putting his faith in God and encouraging David to put his faith in God. Verse 17, "Thus he said to him, 'Do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul my father will not find you, and you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you.' And Saul my father knows that also." So Jonathan's already planning to be David's right-hand man when David becomes king. "I'm your guy, David. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to support you. God has made this very clear. This is where you're going to be." Verse 18, "So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed at Horesh while Jonathan went to his house." And so Jonathan's covenant commitment to David was a recognition of both of them recognizing the great commandment of loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and loving your neighbor as yourself. And so that was the commitment they made to others. That was the commitment they made to each other. Well, there's another line in the song that goes, "You've got troubles and I've got them too. We stick together and we see it through because you've got a friend in me." And that takes us to our idea of the constant concern. Because when Saul turned absolutely against David, there was a period of time where it was like he was trying to kill David, and then he was letting him come back, and then he was sending him out into battle, hoping the Philistines would kill him. But at some point it got to the point where David just had to stay away because Saul was determined to kill him. And Jonathan stuck with Saul, or with David, over his father. Jonathan put up with David, put his trust and his faith in God, and kept his commitment to his friend David and he maintained and demonstrated a constant concern. And it wasn't some kind of protest against his father. You know, sometimes there's this mentality, well, you know, if dad's for it, I'm going to be against it. That's kind of sometimes a generational thing. If my dad likes it, I'm not going to like it. I remember my daughter, I'll tell a story on my daughter, she's not here. When we were moving into college, we were helping set up as a freshman in college, setting up a room, and some friends came in that live here in Bowling Green, and they came in, and we spotted them, and we had gone to college with them, and we were shaking hands and hugging and talking and laughing, and their daughter was across the hallway. And our daughter looked at her, and she confesses later that she looked at our daughter, and both of them said, "Our parents like each other. I ain't going to like you." They became fast friends, by the way. Yeah, just kind of that, if my parents like it, then I'm not going to like it. Well, that's not what's going on here with Jonathan and Saul. Jonathan knows that what his dad is doing is wrong, and he is going to keep his commitment to his friend David. Look back in 1 Samuel chapter 19. 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 1 through 7. "So now Saul told Jonathan his son and all his servants to put David to death. But Jonathan, Saul's son, greatly delighted in David. So Jonathan told David." So dad says, "Kill David." And it's like, "David, hey, dad said kill you. So we got to do something about this. Now therefore, please be on guard in the morning and stay in a secret place and hide yourself. I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. If I find out anything, then I will tell you." Then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said, "Do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial for you. For he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause?" I mean, he is taking it to his dad because of his sin. His dad's messing up and he's letting him know. Verse 6, "Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul vowed, 'As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death.' Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things, and Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as formerly." And so here you have Jonathan literally saving the life of David by getting Saul to relent on his order at that time to kill David. Unfortunately, it's clear that Saul turned his back on that, changed his mind, and kept trying to kill him. His dad became faithless, but Jonathan remained faithful to his friend. Look in chapter 20. In chapter 20. And we're not going to read all of this, but in chapter 20, there's just so much here between David and Solomon, David and Jonathan, that just makes it almost worth spending the time reading. I just want to read a few verses from this. Chapter 20. Then David, this is now Solomon's, or Jonathan, Samuel. Get it right in a minute. Saul is trying to kill David. Then David fled from Naoth and Ramah and came and said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity? And what is my sin before your father that he is seeking my life?" And Jonathan said, he said to him, "Far from it, you shall not die." So Jonathan's going to save his life. "Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Verse 3, yet David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your sight. And he has said, do not let Jonathan know this, or he will be grieved. But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is hardly a step between me and death." And so then they make an agreement to David's going to stay away from the feast where he's supposed to come, where Saul would have definitely taken the chance, the opportunity to kill him. And they make the agreement that if I'm not there, and your dad asks about me, tell him I'm at a feast, and see how he reacts. So in verse 2018, he says, "Then Jonathan said, tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty. And when you stay," and he talks about that, and that's where they make the agreement of shooting the arrows. Notice what happens in verse 24. The concern that Jonathan has for David almost cost Jonathan his life. So David hid in the field, and when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. The king sat on his seat as usual, the seat by the wall. Then Jonathan rose up and Abner sat down by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. And this went on for a couple of days. And then verse 28, when Saul asked, "Where is he?" And verse 27, "Why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal either yesterday or today?" Jonathan then answered Saul, "David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem, for he said, please let me go, since our family has a sacrifice in the city, etc." Verse 30, then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan. He said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness?" And then in verse 32, Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" He's not backing down. Then Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him down. He was willing to kill his own son because of his hatred of David. And Jonathan was willing to take that risk because of his concern for David. And Jonathan stormed out, and then he went and told David, "It's done. I can't do anything else. Dad's never going to change his mind." And then they are separated, and they're no longer able to be together, except for very rare occasions. And that leads us to the last part of this lesson and the last part of the song. As years go by, our friendship will never die. You're going to see it's our destiny. You've got a friend in me. And the scene, and this is the scene where Jonathan understands Saul will not stop trying to kill David. And there are nothing but cries of sorrow. Look in chapter 20. Verse 34 describes his heartbreak. Verse 34, then Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger at his dad, and did not eat food on the second day of the new moon, for he was grieved over David because his father had dishonored him. And then he and David separated with much, much crying. Verse 41. When the lad was gone, David rose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the more because he knew he would never see him again. Although he did once more, but he was never able to be with him on any kind of consistent basis. Jonathan said to David, "Go in safety, inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord will be between me and you and between my descendants and your descendants forever." Then he rose and departed while Jonathan went into the city. Cries of sorrow, sorrowful tears when there is this awful, awful display of hatred by the man's father and David's inability to be with his friend. But the friend is going to be committed to him no matter how much pain and suffering it causes him. And then over in 2 Samuel chapter 1, now there are several years now of David fleeing back and forth and hiding in various places, and then finally there's a final battle at the end of chapter 28, there in 30 and 31. Saul and Jonathan are killed. And then when David finds out that his friend Jonathan is now dead, you have more tears, and you have one of the most beautiful lamenting songs over what could have been, beginning in 2 Samuel chapter 1, look at verses 11 and 12. Then David took hold of his, this is when he found out about Jonathan's death, took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so also did all the men who were with him. They mourned and wept and fasted until evening. And for the people of the Lord, for Saul and his son Jonathan, and for the people of the Lord and the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. David's heart was broken. His friend was dead. And then he created the psalm. Beginning of verse 19, he tells about how your beauty, O Israel, is slain on your high places, and how have the mighty fallen. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, and the sword of Saul did not return empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and pleasant in their life and in their death, they are not parted. They were swifter than the eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Notice what he says about Jonathan. Jonathan is slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was more wonderful than the love of women. How have the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? Friends who love one another, cry with one another, and cry for one another. Brokenhearted, his friend was now dead. Jonathan didn't console him in the least that now he was going to become king. His friend was dead. And so we see the power of friendship and why you need a friend, why we all need friends, because of our and they need to be friends with common interests, make covenant commitments, have constant concern, and then cries of sorrow when each other hurts. Well, let's get some takeaways, and then the lesson will be yours. Some takeaways. And just two of these tonight. Faith before family. Faith before family. Matthew chapter 10, verses 37 through 39, Jesus says that you cannot love your mother and father more than me, or you will not be acceptable. God has to come first. Come first. God has to be the first in our life, no matter what our family may think, no matter what our family may say. I don't know that there's anybody in here who's had to walk away from family relationships to be faithful to Christ, but people do, and it happens, and we have to be willing to do what God says, no matter what our family says. So faith comes before family. And the second thing is pursue friendship with your church family. Try to make friends with your church family. Don't let the relationships that we have here with one another only take place here at the building. Reach out to and find ways to connect with one another, because when you think about it, who else do you have a close common interest with like you have with your brothers and sisters in Christ? Now, I have a cousin that, in fact, he's coming in the fall for a gospel meeting here, named Larry McClenney, and he and I grew up together, went to Florida College together. He's a preacher and I'm a preacher, and we spend a lot of time and do vacations and stuff together. And we have a lot of other family that we grew up close to, but he and I have a close relationship, unlike I have with any other of my cousins or even my own sisters, because of our common interest in the cause of Christ. Think of it in those terms. You have the basis for a true friendship right here, people that you go to church with, far greater than any other relationship and any other friendship that you can have in the world. You might have an interest over sports or all kinds of other things, but this relationship we have with each other through Christ should be the basis for the greatest friendships you will ever have in your entire life. So pursue those. Pursue those kind of friendships. And Colossians 3 talks about your loving for one another, where you're a mutual love and a mutual forgiveness and a mutual pursuit of concern for each other. That's what I want you to take away from tonight's lesson. We'll go ahead and get your songbooks out. We're going to sing a song of invitation here. And basically, we're going to ask just a couple of questions. Wrap up. Do we sing that song to God? You have a friend in me. Does God have a friend in me? Not only does God have a friend in me, is a question we need to ask. The other question is, does this church have a friend in me? Make it very personal. If there's anything you need to do tonight to be right with God, whatever it might be, there are people here who are your friends and want to be your closest friends if that's possible through a relationship with Jesus Christ. And if we can help you tonight be right with God, please let us do that. Come forward now while we stand and while we sing.